Welkom bij de podcast Pensionado, aflevering 19. Deze aflevering is voor het grootste deel in het Engels. Ik ben Peter Gaudek en ik praat met pensionado's. Mijn gast is Beatrice van den Bos, geboren en getogen in British Columbia en woont momenteel in Surrey. Beatrice is oudste in een gezin met 7 kinderen. Zij is voormalig lerares op een lagere school. Momenteel werkt zij nog parttime als invalkracht. Ik praat met haar onder andere over de motivatie van haar ouders om te kiezen voor Canada. Het Canada van de jaren 50 en 60. Haar rol als oudste dochter in het gezin. Haar weg naar de universiteit in Quebec. Haar kijk op Nederland. En het belang van bewustwording, van diversiteit en milieu in het onderwijs. Kortom, wij praten over verleden, heden en toekomst. Ben jij geïnteresseerd in interessante inzichten van mensen die de klappen van de zweep kennen? Of sta je zelf voor je pensioen? Of ben je al met pensioen? Dan is deze podcast voor jou wellicht een bron van luisterplezier en inspiratie. Fijn dat je luistert naar De Pensionado. Bij mij op de bank, Beatrice van den Bos. Beatrice, hartelijk welkom bij de podcast Pensionado. Heel bijzonder gast ben je, want je komt helemaal uit het verre Canada, voor mij althans verre Canada. En je bezoekt nu ons mooie, kleine, maar wel kikkerlandje. Mijn eerste vraag is, wie is Beatrice van den Bos? Kan jij je introduceren?
Okay, ik heet Beatrice van den Bos. Ik ben 68 jaar oud. Ik ben nu in Nederland op vakantie om familie te ontmoeten. Ja. Met familie te zijn.
Ja, je komt uit Canada, heb ik begrepen. Mm-hmm. Dat is wel interessant. Dus jouw ouders zijn naar Canada geëmigreerd. Mm-hmm. Weet je nog in welk jaar dat
ja,
was?
Ja, dat weet ik allemaal. Mijn vader in het jaar 1950, mijn moeder 1951.
1951. Mm-hmm. Ah, begin jaren 50. Ja. Begin jaren 50. En was er ook een speciale reden voor? Ken je dat verhaal? Waarom kozen zij voor Canada?
Mijn vader, omdat hij land wilde vinden, want Nederland was te klein. Hij wist dat in Canada er veel land was en toen wou hij daar naartoe om boerderij te beginnen. Land te vinden voor een boerderij, eigenlijk.
Ja. Maar was hij al boer, farmer?
Niet eigenlijk, maar hij had agriculture, hoe zeg je dat in Nederlands, gestudeerd hier in Nederland.
Ja.
Maar hij dacht dus geen kans hier om een boerderij te kunnen kopen, of land, zelfs land te kunnen kopen. Daarom is hij naar Canada gegaan.
Is het zo dat je vader en moeder elkaar al kenden?
Nee, helemaal niet.
Dus ze hebben elkaar
in Canada leren kennen.
In Canada ontmoet.
In Edmonton.
Mm-hmm. Ja. En hoe hebben ze daar elkaar ontmoet?
Ik denk dat het is via die vrienden, Nederlandse vrienden.
Ja.
Common friends.
Common friends. Mm-hmm. Ja, er was natuurlijk een grote Nederlandse gemeenschap die daar ook huisvestte.
Ja, oh ja, er zijn nog altijd veel Nederlanders in Canada.
Ja.
Maar in de jaren 50, ik denk dat er zijn veel Nederlanders van Nederland naar Canada gegaan.
Ja, ja. Allemaal op zoek naar ruimte en rust.
Ruimte en rust.
Je bent 68 jaar, zeg je. Je woont in Canada. In welke stad?
Ik woon in de provincie van British Columbia.
Ja.
In de stad eigenlijk van Surrey, dat is dicht bij Vancouver. In de buurt van Vancouver.
Ja, dicht bij de grote stad.
Ja.
Is er dan nog een onderdeel van Vancouver? Of?
Nee, het is een echt
dorpje.
Ja.
Ja.
Niet een dorpje, het is een stad. Ook een stad.
Ja.
Er zijn veel, dicht bij Vancouver zijn er veel. Dus Burnaby, Delta, Surrey, North Vancouver. Dat zijn allemaal die, niet dorpjes, steden.
Echt steden. Ja, het is een conglomeraat van steden rondom Vancouver. Mm-hmm. Zeg maar.
Ja, een beetje zoals hier, wat noemen jullie dat? Den Haag, Amsterdam, Rotterdam, Utrecht, denk ik, de Rondstad of zo?
Randstad. Ja, een beetje vergelijking. Ja, ik begrijp het. 68 jaar, je bent met pensioen. Mm-hmm. Wat was jouw werkzame leven? Wat heb je gedaan in jouw werkzame leven?
Ik ben onderwijzeres, is het woord?
Onderwijzeres, ja.
Van het Frans. In Canada hebben we iets dat we noemen French Immersion.
Ja.
Dat is voor de de kinderen vanaf 5 jaar, de kindergarten, kleuterschool tot de 12e jaar kregen ze Frans les. Bijna de hele dag kregen ze Frans les.
Frans les.
Immersion, om echt in het taal te wonen. Als ze op school zijn.
Wat een mooi systeem. Mm. Maar begrijp ik dan dat het niet alleen om taal gaat. Het gaat om alles wat aangeboden wordt, is in Frans.
Ja.
Geschiedenis, ja. Wiskunde, mm-hmm. Rekenen, taal, mm-hmm. dat soort.
Ja. Precies.
En is dat dan zeg maar een middelbare school, een lagere school waar je hebt gewerkt?
Het begint, ik heb het in Canada noemen we dat een elementary school. Dat is vanaf kindergarten tot meestal zevende klas. Zeg ik dat goed? Grade 7.
Zevende klas.
Zevende klas.
Ja, helemaal goed.
En daarna gaan ze naar secondary school.
Secondary school.
Van 8 tot 12.
Ja. Dus je hebt altijd met kleine kinderen gewerkt eigenlijk. Mm-hmm. Kan jij zeg maar zelf ook nog herinneren hoe het was in jouw tijd op die leeftijd?
Ja.
Wat voor bijzondere gebeurtenis komt bij jou op? Of welke ervaring, experience, komt er bij jou op van die tijd?
Toen ik op school zat?
Ja, als klein meisje.
Ja. Maar het was heel verschillend van wat het nu is. Maar wij waren kinderen die bewoonden echt in de bergen. En op school te gaan was het met een bus, een schoolbus. En op school was het, het was allemaal in Engels, niet in Frans.
Nee.
Voor het begin. En het was meer structured en echt.
More structured, ja. Daar kan ik me alles bij voorstellen. Ja.
Ja. 50 jaar, 60 jaar geleden was alles.
Ja. Ja.
Het was een kleinere school. Ik weet eigenlijk niet wat je wil vragen met die vraag.
Kijk, ik kan me heel goed voorstellen. Als kind van ouders die geëmigreerd zijn, gingen heel veel kinderen, of tenminste heel veel ouders, of heel veel mensen emigreerden. Dus je kreeg ook heel veel culturen bij elkaar, denk ik, ook op die lagere school. Of was het alleen maar Nederlandse kinderen?
Waren het alleen niet alleen Nederlandse, maar er waren kinderen van misschien ouders uit Engeland of uit.
Ja.
Als we meestal witte mensen, was niet de culturen van een beetje nu als vandaag is het.
Ja.
Cultuur van overal op school.
Ja,
maar in die tijd was het echt. Er waren Nederlanders, er waren Duitsers, er waren Engelsen. Er waren
echt Europees.
Ja, was echt meestal Europees.
Ja, want Vancouver is sindsdien wel veranderd. Het is wat multicultureel geworden, geloof ik.
Ja, heel multicultureel.
Heel multicultureel, zeg je zelf. Ja.
Maar in die tijd.
Ja.
En dat was ook niet in Vancouver. Ik woonde in de buurt van de Okanagan Valley, dat is in de buurt van Kelowna, Vernon, in die, zeg ik, streek van British Columbia.
British Columbia,
ja. Ongeveer 4 uur rijden van Vancouver naar.
Ja.
Het was een dorpje. Ja. Ik woonde, toen ik klein was het in een dorpje.
Ja.
Niet in de grote stad als vandaag.
Ja. Toch nog even terug naar die lagere school. Stel dat je in de leeftijd van, tussen 11 jaar zit je op die lagere school.
6 en 12.
6 en 12 jaar zit je op die lagere school. Weet jij nog een leuke herinnering? Of heb jij nog een leuke herinnering aan een gebeurtenis?
Ja.
Iets waarvan je dacht van. Het mag ook trouwens in Engels, hè, Beatrice, wat mij betreft.
Iets wat ik leuk vond toen ik.
Of waar je onder de indruk van was. Of waarvan je dacht van, goh, dat herinner ik mij nog in die periode. Als klein meisje.
Ja.
Dat het je overkwam.
Ja, misschien iedere dag was het, ik ga het in Engels zeggen. Every day to get to school, we had to go by school bus.
Yeah.
And we were always the first children on the bus, the beginning of the route. And I was always very admired of all the older girls on the school bus who would have their hair done nicely.
Uh-huh.
And I was just a little girl of 7, and I think, oh, amazing. Beautiful hair. Then I never had hair like that myself, but
was very impressive for you.
Yeah, that was impressive for me. Yeah.
Was there a teacher or a teacher who inspired you, which you liked very much?
Well, my grade 4 teacher was quite fond of music.
Yes.
And classical music. So she encouraged us to listen in class to music.
Yes.
But then also introduced me or our family to a program called Jeunesse Musicale, which would, what we had to go to Vernon, which is the next town, to go to concerts.
Yes.
And I think she inspired me to love music.
And
more than...
Especially classical music?
You know, it that just opened the doors to thinking of different music, different types of music.
Yeah.
Because back in those days in our home, we grew up without water, without electricity. Our only source of entertainment was the radio.
The radio, yes.
And, you know, once you start listening to the radio as a child and you say, oh, I heard that song at Jeunesse Musicale, then you start hearing more other types of music. And I became interested in just, it opened my world to,
yes.
You know.
And which kind of music did you like especially?
Well, growing up, of course, you like the Beatles and you like all those bands that were popular in those days. You know, that's when I became, when I was a teenager.
I guess so, the
yeah.
Beatles, the
yeah.
famous Beatles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have two brothers and four sisters.
And your position in this family?
And I'm the eldest of
the eldest.
Seven children. Mm.
Seven children. Yes, that was quite normal in that time.
Mm-hmm. It was,
big
yeah.
families. But I think it gives also quite a responsibility if you are the eldest mm-hmm. of yeah, a family of seven children.
Yeah. Yeah, there's quite a bit I had to do, you know, help with making lunches, helping with bedtimes, helping with homework. Yeah, but, it was a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. Can you also say something about the time between the children, I mean the ages?
Mm.
Is it 2 years difference?
Well, no, the first few, we were quite close. My,
yeah.
It was myself, then my brother, I think was 15 months later, then another 16 months, another sister.
Yeah.
Then there was 2 years for the fourth. And then I think, again, 2 years between the fourth and the fifth. And this fifth and the sixth, let me think, 64 and 3 years.
Yeah.
And then the last one was, there was a gap of about 6 years
yeah,
before
yes,
the last
the,
one was
the youngest.
Yeah.
So when you
so
were...
between myself and the youngest, there's 14 years.
Yeah. Awesome.
But the first five, we were quite close, especially the first four, we were quite close in age.
Yeah. More or less, when you were in the seventh grade, you were responsible for, not responsible, but you have also to take care
yeah.
for four children, four
yeah.
sisters and brothers, mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. It's a huge responsibility.
It is.
I guess.
It is.
And they also expected it from you, just to take care
yeah,
of
them.
Yeah,
I think the expectation is always there when there's, yeah. you know, an older child to help with the family, yeah. to look after, yeah, to help out. To,
of course,
to
of prayer. Course. I recognize that
yeah.
too. But how does this shape you in terms of your mentality, capacity, or your feeling of responsibility? You can imagine everything about
mm-hmm.
those kind of things, I think,
yeah.
if you are in such a position.
Yeah, I guess you just take charge. you see what needs to be done and you do it, or you realize if things
yeah.
need to be done, if I don't do it, who will?
Yeah. Do you also remember a nice situation from that time that you took charge and that maybe your parents said, oh, well done, Beatrice, this because without you, we couldn't do it.
Without me, we couldn't do it. I don't know if they said that,
oh, well,
but definitely, you know, getting us, for example, to the bus.
Yeah.
To make sure we all got to the bus because we had to walk about at least a kilometer from our house to the bus stop. And, of course, the bus driver didn't want to wait, so it was my responsibility to make sure everybody got there.
Yeah.
And probably at 7:30 in the morning, you know, because the bus had to do many more routes, many more stops before 9 o'clock in the morning when school started. So, yeah, a big job of mine was to make sure we all got to the school on time.
Yes, you were mm-hmm. pretty precise then.
Yeah, you had
Are
to
Are you still pretty precise?
Most cases,
I am, most
but you know,
you
now that I'm retired, I can relax a bit.
But you take it with you, huh? Mm. This kind of behavior. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then after elementary school, you jumped into another time frame. Mm-hmm. You become a young woman. Mm-hmm. If you look back to that period, what can you remember as a very special experience in that time? Because then you are 12, you're going to the age of, well, in between, 16, 17, everything is happening, hormones, you see maybe the boys coming, and you look back to that beautiful picture of the buses with the older girls with the beautiful hair, you know, but also you took some from the Dutch culture, I guess, because your parents were Dutch.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, in those times, you really wanted to be part of society. Like now, I'm proud of my Dutch roots and I love them. But at that time, you wanted to be part of the greater culture that was developing. And in Canada, we were, because there were people from so many parts of the world, you didn't want to show your roots too much. You wanted to blend in.
Was the characteristic of the culture typically blending? I can imagine that if you come from England, Germany, or Swiss, that you're all looking for a new kind of culture.
Yeah.
What is that kind of culture?
Mm-hmm. Can you describe that? That's hard to say, because I think it was evolving at the time. Like you didn't... I think people still lived their culture at home, but when they were out at school or out in the community, they tried as much as possible to integrate. But it's interesting question you're asking is... We were integrating into a little bit of an unknown.
Yeah.
A little bit of a, it was a testing ground almost, like what is the best place for.
I see.
You know, what are the best manners to be using? What are the best, and I guess there the teachers would say, teachers, you know, this is in Canada, how we
go
treat
along.
Each other or treat, how yeah. we are kind or yeah. these are examples of kindness. And
yeah. It's quite similar as a. Fusion kitchen, all kind of dishes are coming together, and you make one new dish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. What was, in your eyes, in your opinion, very special in that, especially if you compare it with the typically Dutch culture, which your parents brought with them? Did you saw differences or things you reconsidered as, well, special or?
Special within my, from the Dutch?
Yeah, if you compare it, because you jumped in a totally different world with a different context, experimental, as you say, but your parents probably stuck to the Dutch, you know, typical in home, at least, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, for children, I think you just kind of go with the flow, right? You see what your friends are doing and you blend. Whereas our parents... It was a slower
process
for them.
Yeah.
And my mother was very proud of her Dutch roots, and she maintained them, whereas my father really was ready to integrate into Canadian life. So he, in the end, when he became a Canadian citizen, he said, no more Dutch. No, I'm leaving Dutch behind.
Yeah.
My mother, she kept the language going, which is why I still speak Dutch, and the culture in the house going.
And what was she proud of? Especially if it was the Dutch culture.
Songs, for sure. Food. The geselligheid of Dutch, to be honest. For us, it was the beauty of the geselligness of being Dutch, which we were not, she was not finding in Canada.
Yeah.
It was, it's not as gesellig there, as cozy as you guys, the word you use here, but...
We use the word cozy, just coming together, chit-chat a little bit, drink a little bit, nothing special, gezellig.
And I think my mother really missed that and didn't have much of that in small-town Canada. One of her better friends was a Swedish lady, where they at least saw some similarity of the gezelligness, the coziness. Maybe a different way it was done in Sweden, but yet it was... European, some sense of being European she found in this friend. And we also had a Swiss family friend that, again, you when you go to their house, you feel, you're still Canadian, but you feel like you're you see a sense of culture.
Is it a feeling of welcomeness?
Mm-hmm.
So you feel welcome.
Somewhat at ease. You feel more at ease because you have a little bit of a sense of what's normal or what's expected or what's gesellig.
Yeah.
Whereas in a Canadian home, that wasn't always the case.
Yeah.
It was very more.
And then you mean a real Canadian home.
Mm-hmm.
A family with generations
exactly,
there.
Who's been here for several generations. Who's been there for several generations.
Yeah. Can you say something about the difference? I guess the Dutch family is welcome. Take a drink. Take a glass of water, mm-hmm. for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Gezellig.
Mm-hmm.
And the Canadian approach was? The real Canadian approach was?
Yeah. Think back to that. It was sort of more standardized. Things were... You know, you wouldn't have a nice bouquet of flowers on the table, or you wouldn't have some, the pictures on the wall, the wall coverings were more mundane and simple. Whereas the European touch in a home had some sense of art or some sense of, and maybe that's a big thing. There wasn't the same sense of artistic connection in a typical Canadian home.
Yeah.
The fashion that was happening at the time was what was Canadian homes, the way that it was decorated.
Yeah.
Whereas the European, people from Europe had their own sense of style in a home, and that's what we found in our home. And in a Canadian home, you wouldn't find that. It was a more of a sterile environment.
Yes. I think I understand the difference was cultural enrichment of enrichment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was not so much culture.
Mm-hmm.
It was more about surviving, I guess. If it is about the Canadian, the old Canadian
mm-hmm.
Culture,
mm-hmm.
and the new immigrants brought culture, more mm-hmm. or less,
mm-hmm.
from their own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is what you remembered very well.
Yeah.
Was there something special in your life during that time? Was there a friend or a girlfriend which was very special for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did have. My best girlfriend at the time is still my friend.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's very strong.
I realize, as you're saying that, she's a person of mixed heritage. Her father's Japanese.
Yes.
And her mother Canadian, Caucasian. We're still best friends.
And why?
After all these years.
And why is that?
Probably because when I went to her home, even though it wasn't European, I still felt that there was something that wasn't following the decorations were different. That we weren't following the strict sort of the formal Canadian way of doing things. Her house had something to it that you didn't have to follow a certain rule.
What do you mean by certain rule? Can you?
Well, it's just I don't know how to describe that, but in the way Canada was developing, you'd walk into a house and you'd know what to expect in a typical Canadian home of the time in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
Whereas when I went to my friend's home, kind of like my home, there was things that were not the stereotypical Canadian way. And you just felt somewhat at ease to see that.
Ah.
Okay, this house has things done a little bit differently, so I feel it's okay in my house too, things are a little bit different. Because of my parents' European connection.
Yes, so the difference is to care for a bond, more or
mm-hmm.
less.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's what my mother felt too, when, the Swiss friend she had, the Swedish family we knew.
Yeah.
You just feel that connection of it's okay not to follow these stereotypical rules that
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
people were looking for, I guess.
Yeah. What is the nicest experience you remembered with your best girlfriend in that time as young girls? Growing up, seeking for adventure, loving the Beatles.
Yeah. Well, one of the memories I have with her is we traveled by bus to Vancouver to visit. She had two sisters living in Vancouver, so we traveled by Greyhound bus
mm-hmm.
to Vancouver to visit her sisters. And that was my first time ever in a big city. The town where I grew up, Lumbee, is very small. We had maybe 3,000 people.
So it was overwhelming.
But Vancouver was so big. Yeah. And I remember buying a nice shirt, paisley.
Yeah.
Shirt and pants for the occasion of going to Vancouver.
you bought it because there was a special event coming up.
Yeah, exactly, to have some nice clothes to wear to Vancouver.
At home. In Vancouver or at home?
No, I bought it at home in order to wear it in Vancouver.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I saw it the other way around.
Yeah, you think so. That would be the way to go. I probably bought a few things in Vancouver, too. I don't remember that, but I do remember a paisley shirt with a green paisley shirt with green pants.
Yeah. Were there special topics in that secondary school? Which were you inspired from?
In secondary school?
In secondary school, because that is the portal before studying, I guess.
Well, you know, then I had I took French class and German lessons, that which inspired me to continue language learning, which I ended up doing for the most part. Mm-hmm. I participated in some sports, but then realized I'm not that sportsy. I played grass hockey.
Really? Yeah. All my daughters play grass hockey.
Oh, really? But I realized I tried it for a year or 2 years, but I realized it was fun. It was a nice thing to do as a team with school.
Yeah.
With your friends to go on little bus trips to play against a school in a neighboring community.
Yes.
That was fun. But I also realized that sports weren't my cup of tea.
But you mentioned earlier in our conversation also something about music. Apparently you love the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
But do you also play music for yourself? Or was there also a family tradition in terms of playing music?
I had a little bit of piano lessons. But the thing is, and I should probably add this too, we were not a wealthy family. We didn't have a lot of money. So to take music lessons, that requires extra money. And that was not something that was able to fit into our budget.
So,
no, I didn't take any lessons. I like music. I like listening to music. But, I would love to have learned to play an instrument, but I didn't.
What is the meaning for you if it is about music? What does it do with you? You open up your heart for the music because of the teacher in the elementary school?
Oh, yeah, that's... Mrs. O'Neill was her name. You just realize that the world is full of different music. I mean, we grew up quite isolated. Listen to the radio. That was our only source of any kind of entertainment. So, you know, what this teacher did is opened up, there's other music out there. And I guess I just kept learning about music from there on. And now I enjoy music from most types of music.
Yeah, you said kept learning from music. What do you mean by that, kept learning by music?
Did I say that?
You said that, yeah.
Yeah, kept learning about music, more about the different types of music out there, the roots of music even. Like, I became more interested, more aware in what music does for the world and how music blended from African music, how it was brought over and how it influenced so many other types of music in the Western world. And I just became more aware of, unfortunately, I didn't play anything, but I became more aware of music and how it's affected, how it's influenced the world.
How it influenced the world, Is there a connection between your interest for language and music?
Music helped me learn languages, that's for sure. I mean, music, when I was a little girl, Mom sang a lot of, it was Kinderliches, a nice, ein, zwei, drei, vier, Hüche von Papier, and Pusche Mau. All those songs she sang with us when we were children, which is, I think, what helped me learn, speak Dutch.
Yeah.
And I know when I was studying French way back, many years on from high school, but when I was studying French in Quebec, I listened to songs to understand the flow of a language, and it helped me learn French very fast. So yeah, music I love music. I love listening to music. I just don't play any music.
High school, then you finished high school, and then you already decided to study French, I guess.
Not right away, no. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to study, so I took a few years off.
Few years?
I didn't.
Meaning
I think
2 years? 3 years?
I was 22 when I went back, so 3 years I took off of.
What did you do in
break.
That?
I worked.
You worked?
I found jobs. I worked pumping gas at a gas station. I worked in restaurants. I was in Netherlands at least once during that time, maybe twice. I traveled a bit. I worked. And I wasn't sure at the time what I wanted to study. And it wasn't actually until one of my girlfriends and I visited her brother who was studying at UBC. And then I thought, this university could be fun. So then I pursued.
After meeting that guy, the brother of your girlfriend, he inspired you to go to UBC.
Well, I didn't even go to UBC. He inspired me to go to university.
The university.
Plus one of my sisters, my younger sister, had already gone to university as well. So I was inspired by two people, really.
Yeah.
Well, first the visit to UBC, I thought, it just helped me realize that this is an interesting lifestyle. This is a whole other world out there. I applied to UVic, University of Victoria, and got in.
You got in.
Mm.
Okay. What is your important takeaway from that working period? Don't know what to do, just starting to work.
Mm.
A lot of adventures. what are the most memorable takeaways for you from that period?
Yeah, well, first of all, that money was hard to earn. You know, I mean, minimum wage in those days was, I don't know, maybe $5 an hour and not much. You know, so you had to work hard to make a go of things.
Mm-hmm.
The jobs were kind of boring. Like after a while, you realize, okay, I don't want to work at minimum wage or want to work at simple jobs. It was fun while I did it, like working at a gas station, pumping gas. Met lots of different people. It was exciting. It was fast-paced. It was fun.
Yeah.
But I realized I didn't want to do that.
How did your parents react on your decision not to go to university directly, but just to find your way in daily life?
You know, my mother wasn't all that happy about it. So she was that constant source of reminding me, don't forget, you know, don't make big plans now. Make sure you go to university at some point. Don't just look at this money-making as... oh, it's easy money and I don't need anything more than that. Just she reminded me the importance of
studying.
Even for a woman to be an independent if you needed to be. She said, don't make sure you go to university and don't make any big decisions, you know, like maybe even getting married or having children before you finish.
She was a wise
university.
Woman.
Yeah, she was, a wise woman. Yeah.
And your father? What did your father say?
Well, you know, he was always wanting his children to work on the farm. So he said, okay, just... you know, finish your school and then, like, finish high school and then you can work on the farm. But I knew that I didn't want that. I knew that there was more out there than
the farm.
Than the farm, yeah.
But I also now understand that he succeeded in getting a farm in around Vancouver.
Well, no, that was, I guess it's not around, but it's in the Lumbee area where I grew up, and that was a 4-hour drive from Vancouver.
Oh, there's a lot.
For you guys, for you Nederlanders, that's a long distance.
Then
for
I'm already,
us, it's nothing.
I'm already in Paris then.
Yeah, exactly. we've just driven through some mountains and arrive at another town.
Exactly. But about the farming, it was agriculture, I guess. Mm-hmm. Agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not cattle or...
Well, it was a bit of a combination. We had some cattle... and some hay fields, some haying. But, yeah, it wasn't the biggest farm, to be honest. My dad did have to work off the farm in order for us to. So the farm wasn't our biggest source of income. It was.
That's a tough life.
Yeah, it was. Mm. It was, you know, and we all had to help. Like, I had to milk the cows. We had 2 or 3 cows, and I had to milk the cows, or I had to help with all those farm chores as a child.
Yeah, yeah, especially as the eldest one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I had to do quite a bit of...
I think so.
But I look back and I love that I had to, you know, I'm glad that I had to do farm work because I think it creates a strong character in a person and a good work ethic.
Yeah. You talk about yourself, strong person and a good work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
Can you make that more explicit? What does that mean for you? What are the strong points in your personality? And what about ethics? Can you say something about that?
I don't mind working. I like working. I like being physical. I like getting up and doing things. And I find it difficult to even sit down and watch a movie. I like to be busy. I like to be creating. I like to be planning. I like to be organized.
That says something about your energy.
Mm-hmm.
How is your personality shaped by this? You said a strong woman. I guess you're a strong woman. Mm-hmm. I can see that. But what? Why are you see yourself as a strong woman?
Well, I mean, I think I was raised having to be a strong person. So at least in my mind, you just take that into your life. I know that if the more I do, the more I create, the more fun I have, and the more successful, I don't know if I want to use the word successful, but the more I make out of life, the more interesting things fall into my lap, and I can make a go of things rather than...
And that is generally speaking, I guess, because you're... bring those kind of characteristics also with you if you are teaching, if you build up the new generation, so to speak.
Yeah. And my children too, like I've just raised them to be, you know.
What was the most important message for your children? Or what is maybe the most important message by all those kind of experience you bring with you?
Yeah, to work hard, to be grateful for what you have, and to things don't just fall on your lap. You have to go out to get them. You have to create the opportunity for things to happen, not expect them to come to you.
Yeah. Are they successful in that too?
Yeah, over the years, they've become successful at, I had to push them a little bit.
Of course.
Sometimes, but they've managed to build a good life.
So that is your role as a parent, be a very valuable coach too, support them and direct them a little bit, help them a little bit.
Yeah. Nudge them into the right direction, remind them where they've come from, where they could go, what the skills they have, what they could add to their skill set to become a better person or a more efficient person or more,
Yeah, I can imagine that. Typically the role of a parent too, I think. Right. High school, 3 years of work, exploring the world in a totally different way. Then you get the idea to study because you were inspired by, the brother of a girlfriend. And then you took the step and then you got in. French, totally different world. The world of students, the world of big talk, the world of dreams, ambitions. Do you recognize that, or were you just a hardworking student, no time? How did you experience that?
About
time?
University life, you mean?
University life, yeah. First year, not a greenie, because you had a lot of experience. Mm-hmm. So you met also students directly from high school, probably.
Yeah, some of them were directly from high school, a little bit mature. I was already a bit more mature.
Exactly.
And at the time, I was at the same university where one of my sisters was attending, the University of Victoria. Mm-hmm. I didn't really fit into that crowd of first-year students, a typical first-year student crowd, because I was that much older. And so I spent more time with my sister and her friends. And that's also when I became my husband. Even in the first year of university, we met.
You met your husband in the first year of university.
Yeah.
Love at first sight.
And because I was already a bit older, I guess, or a few years older than... I was not a greenie.
He was also studying?
Mm-hmm.
In the first year? Or
no, he was doing his master's degree. He's actually from Ghana in West Africa, and he was studying resource geography. And we met on campus.
Love at first sight.
Mm-hmm. I guess it was. I will admit.
But that changed your world completely. If you compare it with the other high school first year students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did. I mean, he was 5 years older than me, so that was a whole different way of thinking and a whole different mindset.
Yeah.
Which I was ready for. Like, I think, having those 3 years of working minimum wage jobs, etc., I'd probably had enough of that younger life of being young and useful and independent. Yeah. And I was ready to move on to a different part of my life. And then we met and we got to know each other and ended up getting married and then went to Quebec. That's when I went to study French in Quebec. We did it together. We moved there together to study.
You must help me because first year you met your husband. He's from Ghana, and he's in his master's phase.
Mm-hmm.
Then you married?
Yeah, we married after about a year.
About a year. Mm-hmm. So almost you finished your first year, and mm-hmm. then you married.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that gives a huge impact.
Mm-hmm.
Studying, marriage. Mm-hmm. And then you decided to go to do something.
Well, to move to Quebec to learn French.
To learn French.
Even though I had done a few courses of French in my first year, I knew that if I really wanted to learn the language properly,
yes,
I would have to go somewhere, go to a French-speaking mm-hmm. part of Canada or elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And at the time, the government of Canada was really encouraging people to become, Canadians to become bilingual. So there's quite a bit of money, bursaries and things to
yes.
encourage people to study French in Quebec. So I applied to the University of Laval in Quebec City and got in, spent a year there, just hardline learning.
Yes, but also I think in a not easy situation because 23 years old, I think, after that first year in Vancouver, I guess, mm-hmm. and then you go to Quebec and then mm-hmm. you're already married.
Mm-hmm.
He's, I think, finished almost. Or he finished.
He had just finished his master's.
So he started to work and mm-hmm. you have to study for another 4 years.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work out? How did you cope with this very interesting challenge in that time?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, by the wisdom you have now.
yeah, for sure. Well, what we ended up doing is we lived in Quebec City for 1 year. He also wanted to learn French, so we were both studying French for a year.
Yeah.
He worked, he did some work. I did mostly studying. And after a year, Kingsley's his name, he was ready to get a job in his field.
Mm.
I was still studying. So then we thought, okay, where could we go? Where could we move in Canada where it would be easy for him to get a job and I could continue my studies, which happened to be Saskatchewan, the town named Regina, Saskatchewan. There was a university there. The unemployment rate was low, so it would have been easy to get a job. We packed our bags. We didn't have much stuff at the time, but mm-hmm. and many belongings, but we packed everything into a trunk and moved to Saskatchewan. I finished my studies and he got a job.
Nice.
And that's kind of where our life started as a
family.
I mean, it was, yeah, as a family, because after I finished my studies, after 3 years, then we started a family.
Yeah, then you're already 28, 29 mm-hmm. years old. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, this kind of thoughts mm-hmm. comes up. Yeah. What was the magic between you both?
Yeah, I don't know. We had similar hopes. We had
similar hopes. Can you tell me something?
For family and for learning to live in a new culture isn't easy, right? So there was a lot of that learning curve as to, you know, how do you best, I guess, kind of like my parents did in the early 50s, learning to live in a new Canadian culture.
Mm-hmm.
So was Kingsley learning, you know, about how to live in Canada and what it took to be Canadian, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So that was part of our learning together.
Mm-hmm.
And then the building the dream, you know, the Canadian dream of, you know, buying a house, having children, or finding a good job, buying a house, having children, and moving on in life, which is what we ended up doing. I finished my studies and we bought a house.
Mm-hmm. But you felt also
children.
You felt also in love.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, that is very inspiring. Why? Why Kingsley? Again, what was his magic?
Mm. Well, first of all, he was a very good looking man. That's always nice. And he had a nice personality, he was kind, he was caring, he was fun.
Yes.
We had similar interests. We used to ride our bikes together all the time in Victoria to school and back, and I love culture. Meeting somebody who's cultured is, for me, was a big attraction too.
I think it is a wonderful blend. Do you also see the same things back in your children? The blend of mm-hmm. a strong woman and a very charming, nice personality?
Yeah. Yeah, I see it in my children. Yeah.
You're proud on your children.
Yeah,
yeah you are.
Yeah.
It's good.
Should be, yeah.
Should be, yeah. Yes, but... Mm-hmm. nice. So, okay, 29, 20, 30, I think, something like that. And then
you become both very serious if it is about children.
Mm-hmm.
They come, I think. At what age did your first child came?
He's born in 84, so that means I'm born in 56. That means I was 28.
28.
Mm-hmm.
Then your world is also turned around.
Yeah.
How did you cope with that? What was your way of doing things in this very busy period, so to speak? How did you arrange things as a young mother?
Mm-hmm.
Because everything changed.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I was teaching. By this time, I had a job as a teacher, as a French immersion teacher. And you learn to balance.
Was it a progressive approach? I mean, Kingsley was also part of education.
We shared the responsibility.
Yeah.
He was helpful in, not as fathers are today. I think fathers are very involved today. And in the 1980s, you could see that involvement progressing slowly over time.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kingsley was quite involved. He would help with most everything, you know, when it came to bedtime, reading, playing, looking after them, daycare, all of it.
Yeah.
It was a shared responsibility.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a good combination, you two.
Yeah.
And then how many years later came the second child?
Three.
3 years. Mm-hmm. On purpose?
Mm-hmm.
So you waited as a couple?
Yeah, you just planned it out.
Was also possible in 1984.
Yeah, it was, for sure. It was,
Yeah,
then another one came, and shortly thereafter came number three. And then that was it.
Three children?
Mm-hmm.
Boys, girls?
Two boys and a girl. Girl in the middle.
A girl in the middle?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's the one that's here now with her twins.
with the twins.
Mm-hmm.
So, never a dull moment for a grandmother.
No, for sure. No, there's never a dull moment.
No, you already started to work at elementary school, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then you are a young woman with two little children. Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
What was your way of looking to that kind of education? What did you bring with you, if it is about doing the lessons and preparing the lessons?
Mm.
Was there a message in the way you approached the way of teaching? Or was it just, this is the book, do it?
No, I was never good at following those curriculums very well.
That is interesting.
No, the way our system works in Canada, the French immersion in the elementary school, not just French immersion, but teaching in the elementary grades from kindergarten to grade 8. In the classroom, we are responsible for all subjects, for social studies, for English, for grammar, for everything, math, everything. So you create a community in a classroom, a community of learning in the classroom. I'm there all day with the students. So you learn to get to know each other better. You learn to create a community.
Six students? Did you say that?
No. We had about 24.
24 students.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One community, 24 students.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the meaning of a community in that sense?
Yeah, in my sense. Like, it was more my way of teaching.
Yeah.
I like to create the sense of belonging, the sense of togetherness, the sense of working together, the sense of community. And for me, what was really important was the environment. Teaching about the environment, the planet, and taking care of the planet, and also multiculturalism. So I wove that into all of my subjects, into the approach. And whenever possible, we talked about, even in math or in social studies, whatever, we talked about taking care of the planet and the importance of multiculturalism and getting along with other people and working together. And samenleven, that you guys call it here in Nederland.
Yeah.
It's a nice word.
That sounds very progressive for that time.
I was, yeah,
because
quite progressive.
Yeah. We talk about 1990, something like that.
I started teaching in 1983.
Three, it's the beginning, that is, of course.
So, yeah, probably the first 5 years I was, I stuck to the...
Yeah.
And once I was more relaxed in the classroom, I started, I think it was fairly progressive, especially both of them. But I realized, marrying an African, I realized that the world needs to get along rather than We need to find similarities instead of differences.
How did the colleagues react on that, your approach?
Yeah, they liked it.
They liked it.
They saw it as, oh, okay, this is...
And were you, in that sense, more or less the founder of this kind of approach?
I guess so. In my, for certainly, and I don't know if I was the founder of it, but I was certainly one of the few people who did it.
Practitioner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you look back now and you want to say something about the results, are there, in your opinion, clear results to mention, to point out? Because you saw the traditional way of approaching, and then you said, probably, no, I want to approach it differently because my opinion is, and also your experience is, this is necessary to combine, to create a community. What did the students give back to you? Or what did you saw, if it was...
Mm-hmm. If you look, it's hard to measure those things, but how I feel, how I see the fruits of my labor...
Yes.
...is through the eyes of the students. Sometimes, even today, I might go shopping in my community I might be in my community and I come across a student.
Yes.
A former student. And they always say to me, this is what I appreciated learning in our class. You taught me to care for the planet, and I still do. You taught me about other cultures, and it helped me with this. Like, I get the feedback from the parents and from the students as to how they were able to integrate what I taught them into their lives. Mm-hmm. And I think they're still doing it. I mean, I see students, like I said, quite often, because I live in the community where I taught, and I get the feedback on a very regular basis.
Nice, nice, nice.
It is nice. It's very rewarding. Nice.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and what did you do yourself to professionalize yourself in that field?
Lots of reading, if I had a chance to take extra courses. But a lot of it was innate, like, you know, learning about the environment and how to take care of it. It seemed easy, what I know about it, I will teach my students. I didn't feel I needed a lot of training to do that. I just did it. It became an innate,
From
the heart.
By experience also, because you saw a lot of different situations and you succeeded in to cope with this. And so you brought it to a kind of curriculum, kind of teaching program. Mm-hmm. That's very nice. Mm-hmm. Very nice to hear. Yes. What was for you the most exciting moment in that period of teaching?
Well, I think, you know, in the teaching world, it's not an easy profession. So you have to really feel confident in your skill, in your skill set, to be able to start branching out to test the boundaries a little bit and say, okay, well, I know that this isn't in the curriculum to teach about the environment, but I'm going to integrate it into my curriculum. So I had to have the confidence to do it. My last teaching before I retired, I taught at the same school for 20 years, which in my opinion is just a really, you feel so much part of a community when you do that. Yeah. And it's an enriching, and the parents appreciate what I became known as that teacher who taught about the environment, who taught about multiculturalism, and a lot of parents wanted their child in my class. One of the things that I ended up doing, and I still honestly can't remember how I started it, but I started baking bread in the classroom, like baking bread the old-fashioned, you know, 8 loaves at a time with my students. And it became a project of baking together once a week. Parents would buy the bread so that the bread was sold to the family if they wanted it. Mm-hmm. And then that money we saved, and at the end of the year, in June, we decided as a class, okay, what should we do with this money now? Keeping charities in mind, like giving it, not using it for us personally, but to, like, not to have a class party at the end of the year or anything, but how can we give this money now to an organization in the world that could benefit from it?
Yeah.
And the students and I, we would brainstorm different charities. And I said to them, you know, why don't we... First, they wanted to choose some local charities It's okay. It's a good start, local charities. But why don't we think about some other charities, too, maybe in the world?
Yeah.
Maybe, so in the end, we came up with local charities, Canadian charities, and then world charities. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I, again, opened, their, broadened their minds about giving, not just keeping for myself, but giving.
Do something useful for the world?
Yeah.
That is the basic idea?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And not just their own community, like it could have been something, you know, a food bank, local food bank.
Or, for instance.
Yeah. Or an organization. Sometimes the children wanted to give to the BC Children's Hospital.
Yeah.
Because maybe they had experience with the hospital. So every year it was a different charity.
Yeah.
But we always, it was like two, like I said, some local charities, some national charities, and some international charities.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel again like I taught them about the world is a bigger place.
Yeah.
This is, these are grade two children, so they're 7 and 8 years old.
Yeah.
They're young.
They're very young.
But they, I think I impacted them enough to see the world from a different lens. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If it is about the teaching, the age of the children were 7 to 8 or also 10, 11, 12?
I most of my teaching was in grade 2, which
grade two.
When they're 7 and 8 years old.
Yeah, 7 and 8 years old. A very important period also to bring awareness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the first steps in awareness.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is there a lot changed if you go back? You were born in 1956, raised in the 60s, well, high school maybe 70s, 76, and then starting to work, something like that. In that time, the society was more or less more built up by European immigrants, also the old Canadians, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then in time, a lot of different other people came into Canada, Japanese, Chinese, South America.
Mm-hmm.
It, of course, gives an extra challenge. You talked about multiculturalism, just to make connections between the groups, just to connect a society in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
What can you say if it is about the rate of success in this world where polarization is rather apparent, so to speak. Can you say something about that? If it is your experience and by the latest experience and insights you have now?
Well, I would say that, definitely the world over there's polarization. But I see that in Canada, and I'm going to speak more about British Columbia because that's where I'm most familiar. We're learning to live together quite well in most of Canada. Again, there are certain areas where you get disputes, but we're able to overcome, to work together, to solve, to find solutions. And I think because in a school now, there are so many children of such diverse backgrounds in one classroom, they become friends. They do things together. They learn about each other's cultures, and it becomes, like when I was a little girl, I felt like you had to sort of become part of the mainstream culture. But now I think kids are, the mainstream culture is so much bigger now. There's kids from all over the world in a classroom. So you can't just have one mainstream anymore. It becomes a mirage of many different ways of thinking.
That sounds very attractive.
Mm-hmm.
But if I elaborate on this and my thoughts are then the children, of course, they cope, they go along with each other. They do not know differently. That's good. But how about the parents?
Well,
because they come to school and then they go home and then the prejudgment will probably build up.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see this, or how do you evaluate this? Is Vancouver especially a big city, so to speak? An example, and the world must visit Vancouver just to see how things work out, just to see things in perspective.
I mean, I'm not saying it's perfect in Vancouver or anywhere.
No.
There's tensions between certain groups from time to time, but I do feel that in the school setting, in the workplace, just in the community, people working and living together is much more obvious now than it was.
Yeah. So awareness is growing.
Yeah.
About the necessity of these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Canada is a country of immigrants. Like we can't, you can't deny that. And in order for our population to grow, we rely on immigration.
Yeah. So in that way, maybe it is also an example for the world because it will mingle more and more and more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There will be issues. There always are. I mean, you can't get around it. But
yeah, yeah.
I think we do a fairly decent job.
What are your thoughts if you compare British Columbia, in this case, because you are familiar with British Columbia, and the Netherlands? Are there typically differences between the two countries?
Are you focusing more on the population, on the culture, on
the way we live together, the culture? Yeah. Because I can imagine, just to make my point somewhat more clear, that some things you like here and some things you do not like, and you say, oh no, then it's Vancouver, maybe British Columbia is better, and maybe also the other way around.
When I observe how the various groups of people in the Netherlands live together, and I compare it to what I see in Canada, it feels to me like in the Netherlands, it's still very top-down. I feel that there isn't much representation of the various cultures in this country that have made it to to higher positions, whether it's higher positions in business, in government, in various places. Whereas in Canada, we sometimes have refugees who may have arrived, you know, I don't know, when they're 13, 14, 20 years old, who are now in parliament. And I don't see that in the Netherlands.
We have some, but very minor.
It's minor compared to the length of time that some people have been here and the size of the population of the country here. It just it feels to me like it's not a
imbalance.
I love the Netherlands. I love being here. I love feeling my roots. I love being in touch with my parents when I'm here. I feel like I'm in touch with my parents.
Yeah. What does the Netherlands miss by doing so, as you just told? What can they gain by copying the Vancouver, for instance, policy?
Or the Canadian policy.
The Canadian policy in this case, yeah.
I think as society becomes richer, you open the doors to more ideas, to more cultural, to more points of view. Because right now it really feels like there are certain people who just are living here. They're not part of the samenleven, and they're not part of the overall Dutch thinking. The Dutch, what will eventually become Holland. I mean, Holland is full of people from all over the world. And if there's not that sense of I can rise, I can do more, I can give more to this country, the country's not, it's going to stagnate. It feels to me like there's going to be stagnation after a while. And and you have people living here who, if you feel you're not part of a community, it's hard to be, to love the place and to really integrate and to dig your roots here, have proud roots. It feels like it may be, a lot of people will, like I said earlier, will just be living day to day and not having these big hopes of, I can be president or prime minister, sorry, of this country one day, or I could be the leader or the CEO of a big company. Like if people don't feel that, that possibility, I don't think they can fulfill their lives.
Yes. Whose fault is that, you think?
That's a whole big political question. I would say it's the fault of...
Whose challenge it is? You can... Fault is maybe too strong phrased, but there's a challenge, a society. Who must be in lead of this challenge?
Well, somebody with a very big open mind. It has to come from the government. It has to come from the upper... It has to come from ways of either... I don't think you have to change laws. I don't know that much about the laws here, how they're set up. But the examples have to come. Like in Canada, for example, I mean, we have such a variety of people in our parliament from all over the world who are holding powerful positions in our country.
Yeah.
And that's an example for a young child might say, oh, look at it. I can... You know, somebody from my religious group or somebody from my cultural group is in now the minister of, I don't know, transportation or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe I can be there one day. And if kids don't see that, what do they aspire to being? Yeah. I think it has to come from above. The example has to be there. Yeah. The opportunities have to be opened up to people so that they can rise into those positions. It feels to me like there's a ceiling somewhere that a lot of people that live in the Netherlands can't rise above.
Exactly. And if it's about sustainability, it is necessary just to bring everyone in. Let everyone play. Let everyone experience that mm-hmm. there are chances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think I'm fairly agree with your point of view. But indeed, the bigger question is how to organize this.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe just to fall back again on this very interesting topic, and why shouldn't we not discuss about this? It is also a matter of history. If you look to the Western Europe in general,
mm-hmm.
with a history of colonialism, and then Canada is just a history of surviving, trying to be together, mm-hmm. just to create a new
mm-hmm.
nation.
Mm-hmm. For sure. There's a huge difference.
Yeah. So we talk about mindset, we talk about old thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So probably this old thinking is still in the DNA. Unconscious, maybe, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives effect.
That's it in a nutshell. It's really, that's what it is. But how do you break that? How do you break that shell of that nut, that old, how do you open the older thinking up to some...
And that is why I was so inspired by your example and your effort just to manage this problem also in Canada, in your position.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are two possibilities. You do it or you does not do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And both makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is my respect for that. And of course, we can say that in Holland, luckily, but that is one condition, just so you can say everything, but it must also be heard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because then you can do something with it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it is also idle, that thought. We made big jumps together from family life, children, your husband working, your own role in the educational thing.
Mm.
And now we ended up to the last 20 years of your career. And you mentioned something valuable about how you see society and what, in your opinion, can be an answer.
Mm-hmm.
So, can be. And of course, you pinpointed that there is also a huge role for the government there just to stimulate some processes.
Mm.
Pensioned, you're still an invalkracht. And from there, you have also your experience. Can you conclude now, at this moment, that your work is still in progress? That it is embraced by the younger generation?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a natural process in your case?
I'm going to say I don't see it in every classroom, because when I'm giving, we call it substitute. I'm a substitute teacher if somebody's sick or info.
Yeah.
In some classes, I see a good representation of community learning, but not every classroom. So I think it's still in progress. I think it's still
progress. If you give advice to younger colleagues, what will be then your advice if it is about building up the knowledge infrastructure, starting with the elementary school?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of message, strong message, you want to deliver based on your experience?
Yeah, I say to them, you know, teach as much about the world as you can, as much about learning to live together, to work together, which is a big focus now in Canadian schools, like children having them work on projects together and to learn to work as teams, to learn to understand each other's perspectives. Like I said, a classroom now is so multicultural that it's a valuable tool to have all these different ideas come together in one class.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I put it, you know, the children, let's say the students are working on a project and they are able then to say, oh, well, this is how we do it in my family. Oh, this is how we do it in my family. Maybe come together with all these ideas from different families as to how to, I mean, I'm thinking of grade two students who are 7 and 8 years old, but how to solve a problem or how to try and design something based on a variety of ideas.
Are they trained for it?
The teachers? More so now than before.
Yeah.
Mm.
So they can also transfer their skills to the to the children.
Yeah. For sure. The universities are focusing more on this type of learning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. That's a huge step, I think. A small step, but with a huge effect learning methods.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Children? What are their ages?
My own children?
Yeah, your own children?
40, 37, and 35.
That's rather Not old, but...
Yeah, getting there.
Are you already a grandmother?
Mm.
Yes, you are. Yeah, of course. The twin. Huh?
Yeah, well, before that, I have a 13 and a 14-year-old grandchildren. And now the twins that are 5 months old.
What are your wishes to start with for your children?
For my children?
Yes.
Well, my big message to anybody is take care of this planet. Like, let's work together to take care of the planet so that it can sustain us. I mean, we have a population of, 8.8 billion, I think, people.
Yeah.
And we need to be able to sustain this planet and slow down a little bit on what we're taking from it and how we're taking care of it. So that's a big thing I say to my children.
Yeah.
That's a big message.
Yeah.
And to care about each other and to care about family. Like, to remember that family is what got us to where we are now, and we need to continue to embrace family, and in spite of sometimes the differences in a family, it's an important learning tool to embrace it and to understand each other properly.
Unconditional support within the family. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm,
and understanding, like to make sure we understand why somebody has a way of thinking, and try and tease that apart and say, okay, well, if you think this way about it, how can I help me understand your way of thinking? Help me understand. I mean, when I was a little girl of 8, I used to say, oh, how can we expect countries in the world to get along if members of a family can't get along?
Yes.
And I still believe that. And try and focus on that for my children and my grandchildren, that, and even my students. I used to tell them that too. You know, let's find ways to get along find our similarities rather than our differences.
Does that mean breaking out your own bubble?
Mm-hmm. It does, yeah. Or expanding your bubble, or, yeah, breaking out of it, expanding it.
Yeah.
Either way. Mm-hmm.
But just focus on understanding, not judgment, but understanding first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pensionado, do you look from this moment forward, hopefully a nice, bright future? What are your plans for keep your strengths up, keep your brains working?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I'm still teaching, and I don't see myself stopping, because I love being in the classroom. I love giving. I love teaching. I love being an educator. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
So I will continue, you know, maybe once a week or so for the few more years. And I still volunteer a lot.
So
I do quite a bit of volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
I now have the little grandchildren who will need more of my time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love it. I love being with them and teaching them. And
it keeps you running, for sure.
Yeah, it does, for sure. And now they're 5 months old, so they're not crawling around yet. But a year from now, they're going to be, I'll be running, literally running, I'm sure. You know, my focus is to stay as healthy as I can and live as healthy a life as I can for as long as I can. And I love to travel. I really do. But I'm cognizant of the carbon footprint involved in flying. So I'm limiting trying to make longer trips. Like this trip is, you know, in the Netherlands is now 5 weeks. But I did that intentionally so I could make the most use out of that carbon footprint that it took to get here.
I understand.
You know.
And if you're back home, you plant 1,000 trees.
Well, that's conversation. Yeah, exactly. I do. Yeah, I do as much as I can too.
Yeah. I hear that Vancouver is very progressive if it is about the carbon footprint. They are one of the, I think, the top 3, 4, 5 cities who are very ambitious in reducing these kind of things.
Mm-hmm. We are, you know, more so than I think some, but British Columbia as a province.
Ah, okay.
Every province in Canada is encouraged by the federal government to reduce carbon output. British Columbia is one of the provinces that has a carbon tax, which has done quite a bit to lower the carbon output, I guess.
Yeah.
And Vancouver, of course, is part of that, and we're also planting a lot of trees. I think there's a lot of initiative in Vancouver to...
Is it also your goal to be very active in promoting this ambition? Maybe by doing writing or whatever, talking?
I haven't really thought about writing or talking. I'm so busy with all of my other volunteering and that I mean, I certainly talk to friends and encourage it that way, but and show the example. And
yeah, by, yeah.
I have a little electric car. I'm putting solar panels in my home. I'm doing as much as I can to help reduce. But to go out and do speakings, I might go to protests or act, you know, rallies and things. I don't have the time to speak, other than to influence my friends and family.
Okay, I think
as
it's
much
enough.
As I can.
It's fair enough. Fair enough. Busy enough with those little kids.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, we're coming bit by bit to the end of our conversation, I think, and all my guests get the opportunity to say the last word. So now you look at me. Well, I'll give you 3 seconds just to think about your last words by this podcast, and we'll invite you to give it a shot, so to speak. Maybe with a message, maybe a cry out, statement.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to stand by what I've always been saying, like, this planet is very dear, and we have to do a better job to take care of it. Yeah. It's like our Mother Earth. And if, I guess what I often think to myself is we need to treat this planet the way we would treat our mother, with love, with care, with respect, so it doesn't get sick. I mean, the planet is in a state of I'm not going to say despair, because I don't know if it's there yet, but we can't continue to make use of the resources on this planet as much as we're doing without somehow replenishing it, or without maybe thinking, well, maybe I don't have to use all these resources today. Why don't I think about an alternative to using a certain resource, or why don't I use less of a certain resource? I mean, the city of Calgary, one of the cities in Canada, recently had a water main break, so they had to, like, shut down. One of their main water mains into the city was broken, and they had to repair it. It took about 4 weeks. It's still not fully repaired. And people were asked, okay, you need to reduce your water consumption by, I think, by 75%, but to really reduce it big time. For a lot of people, that was hard to do, because water comes out of our tap. It's free. It's free. It's easy. But I think they're realizing, hey, this water isn't an eternal resource that we have that we can just keep exploiting. And I think that's, in a sense, an example for the rest of the world. We cannot continue to pull from this earth without giving back and without thinking about what we're taking and why we're taking it, and should we take it as much as we do. We all need to live, I get that, but can we reframe it a little bit to say it has to be a communal effort, which is hard because there's so many different opinions in the world.
Yeah. Beatrice. Okay. Thank you very much for this very nice conversation.
Thank you very much, Patrick.
I wish you a nice day, for the days are coming, and a good trip home.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you very much.